Welcome back in. Hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Max Herz, intern Nick here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Corey Curtis from News 2. Corey, what's going on? How are we doing?
Just reveling in a 2-0 start for Team Dynamite this year.
Oh, boy.
Fantastic start to the year. For my U-10 soccer team, we're killing it.
There you go. Can't go undefeated if you don't start 2-0, Corey. That's how that works.
That's right. We just want to be the best 1-0 team we can be this week.
Thank you. You're coaching then?
Yeah.
Nice. Don't forget the orange slices, buddy.
That's right. It's good stuff.
We did fruit roll-ups this week in your honor, Joe.
Ooh, even better. That's how you nice. Start it right there. Coach Corey Curtis on the line with us here on Robbie and Rex Rose. So, Corey, let's start on the Predators front. Tough weekend for him. You get one out of a possible 4 points. And we were talking about this earlier in the show. They're in the playoffs right now. If the season ended today, it's going to be tight coming down the stretch here. I think that's pretty clear at this point. How concerning is it to you? Is it concerning at all that you've got all these different guys having career years, like Duchesne and Forsberg and Yossi? You can go up and down the list. And yet they're still on the playoff fringe. Is that concerning to you if you're David Poile as you move forward?
Well, you can only take it one game at a time, and you got to give 110% and take each opponent one at a time.
Thank
and
you.
Give them the due respect. Oh, I'm not a coach anymore. All right. You know, it is a little puzzling, you know, because you like the way Saros has played largely, and you've got all these guys producing a lot of goals, but we have seen them be a little sloppy with the puck at time and with penalties at times, right? I mean, I don't know if they still lead the league in penalty minutes, but, you know, that's been an issue. So there are some areas of their game that they can tighten up a little bit, but I also think that some of that goes with the style of play that they play. And so some of that stuff is unfortunately just going to happen from time to time. Listen, would I feel better if they were 10 points clear? Heck yeah, I would. But I don't fear where they're at. They've got the next five at home. I know they got one out of 4 points. Those are two really good hockey teams they played. I was happy for them to get a point yesterday. Once they got the point yesterday, I felt pretty good about that. Would have felt better with the second one, but as soon as they got one, I was like, okay, this is not a terrible trip to Pittsburgh. But I also think there's something to playing into the postseason. You know, and we've seen the Predators do that a lot, where they've got to keep playing as they get into the postseason. Because, I, you know, we've seen it where teams get flat when they're resting too much headed into the postseason. And, you know, you can say 50-50, oh, they're rested, they're ready to go, and you see a team take off. And then you see other teams, you know, that, you know, kind of push into the playoffs, and then they're still pushing, and they seem to start faster. And so I think for this team's style of play, I don't think there's anything wrong with that for them to keep pushing. And so I'm not terrified. They've been largely consistent. So, you know, they've had one real drop-off this year. So I'm not worried about them, you know, all of a sudden going four games with 2 points or 1 point. So I guess on a scale of 1 to 10, my concern's like a 3 or a 4.
Do you think they can do anything in the playoffs if they get there?
Sure. Yeah, because look, I mean, what did they do last year? What did we see? I mean, shoot, as long as we've been here, and I know, Joe, you haven't been here quite as long as I have because I'm older than dirt. But, you know, we've seen over the years the Predators have a lot of small players in the postseason get pushed around, whether it be, you know, Marty Erat or Ryan Ellis or Victor Arvidsson, and they moved on from those smaller players and have moved on to these bigger physical guys. And I think it sets them up much better in the postseason to match up with whoever they're going to play for that style of play. And so I think, look, can they go 1 and done in the playoffs? Absolutely. Can they go to the conference finals? I think absolutely. I mean, matchups are important. How you're playing is important. But I think their size and style of play lends well to the postseason. That's just my opinion.
Corey Curtis from News 2 on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. Corey, how likely do you think it is at some point in the draft that the Titans may go running back? With Darrington Evans now gone, you spent a third-round pick on him a couple of years ago. You got Dontrell Hilliard back there as your backup. Do you think it's likely the Titans could address that at some point?
Well, I mean, look at what the Titans did last year at running back. They picked up Deontay Foreman, which I'm a little surprised he's not back. No, I'm a lot surprised he's not back. And then Dontrell Hilliard. So you picked up two guys who each put up 100 yards for you who were on the street. And, again, it's that devaluing of the position that you can find guys who run the football, and a lot of these guys, their window isn't real long. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I can't see them doing it on day one or even necessarily day two. I could see day three if the right guy was there. But I think they have bigger needs, and I think we have seen that if you have the right attack and the right guys up front, there are enough guys out there who can run the football where you can move it on the ground. And so I don't think that should be, you know, paramount for John Robinson. Now, I know he did bring in the running back from San Francisco, who's also a special teams player and a return guy, right? And so that takes that need away again. So I think I would be surprised to see them go running back in the draft.
Corey, I wanted to get...
If they did day three, sorry.
Oh, sorry about that. I wanted to get your reaction to a couple things off the field. And there's a lot. This could be a long answer, but that's okay. Your long answers are very good. One, your reaction to the whole thing with the Brian Flores lawsuit, the Titans being added to it, and all that has resulted from that. But then also the Dwayne Haskins tragic passing, and then some of the we talked about this earlier on the show. Some of the reaction to that, and the reaction to the reaction, which seems to happen a lot on social media in various situations.
Well, I think there's probably more meat on the bone for the first half. So I'll quickly address Dwayne Haskins. You know, as reporters, I think we become detached emotionally from stuff from time to time. And you have to understand that when people's lives, families, whatever, are impacted, they then become human beings. And that's the way we need to address them. And what someone's performance was on the field really doesn't matter when they're tragically killed. I don't think in Dwayne Haskins' obituary, his family's going to include, was widely considered a first-round bust after being drafted 15th overall. I mean, that's just, it's not what you do. It's not the story at that point. It's a 24-year-old young man who lost his life, and it's tragic for him, it's tragic for his friends, it's tragic for his family. And it's a loss for everyone, regardless of what his grades were in school or his performance was on the field or how much money he had in the bank. And so I think we all need to remember that. And there are some people, obviously, in higher places who are probably regretting that they forgot that as well. And so I'll leave that at that. As far as with the Titans goes, listen, I'm all for the Rooney Rule. Absolutely. I'm for more minority coaches, getting more minority coaches out front so that they have that opportunity. But the whole world knew that Mike Mularkey was getting that job. That was not a surprise, okay? And the Titans did follow through with the process. So, I mean, look, should they have told him, hey, you're our guy? Probably not. But at the same time, you know, that's how business is done. You hire people you know and who you trust, and Amy Adams Strunk had just become an owner and was just developing an inner circle of people she trusted, and Mike Mularkey was one of those people. He made a point to communicate with her when he took over, and so she trusted him, and he did a good job for this football team. Regardless of what anybody says, when you take the team that won 5 games in 2 years and you win 18 games in the regular season and the first playoff game in 14 years, you've done a heck of a job. And she appreciated that. Now, ultimately, he wasn't the right guy long term. That's neither here nor there. But they went through with the process, and the process is about getting people in the loop, and it's about getting people in front of people so they get a chance to impress. Right? You know, it's about finding out who people are. I mean, the Pittsburgh Steelers, nobody knew who Mike Tomlin was when the Pittsburgh Steelers hired him. He got in front of them and blew them away. They weren't planning on hiring him. I mean, I think it was that supposed to be Wisenhunt's job?
I think it was.
And so it was supposed to be Wisenhunt's job, and Tomlin got in front of him, and they were just like, we got to hire this guy. And so, you know, the Titans did their interviews, and if one of those candidates had blown them away, they may have changed their mind from where they were headed. And if Mike had blown the interview, maybe they would have changed their mind. But he didn't have a contract, and nothing was signed. And so I don't know that they're going to get in that much trouble. And I know you worry about the spirit of the rule, but to me, a large part of the spirit of the rule is getting people out front and getting them interviewing. And I use, you know, Todd Bowles down in Tampa as an example. You know, he is a lot like Mike was. He's a guy they trust. So Bruce stepped away, and they just put Todd Bowles in place because he's been there, and they trust him. And nobody makes a fuss about that, right? And so it's kind of a similar deal. And so I get the notion that it looks bad. I do. But I don't – to me, I'm not up in arms about it. I'm not mad at Ray Horton about it because I know Ray Horton has been a guy who's kind of been out front with some of this stuff too. And I thought he might be a guy who wound up on that lawsuit at some point. So that's not a big surprise. And I don't begrudge him for it because all these guys want is an equal shot. And believe me, look, I'm not painting myself as a victim 100% at all. But I know what it's like to not get a job and not understand why. And so for that aspect, I can commiserate. I can't commiserate with the things that they've had to deal with being people of color. But I can commiserate with not understanding why you're not getting a better job a better shot at certain jobs. But again, the Titans, bottom line, follow the letter of the law. And that's where I kind of stand on that one.
Corey Curtis from News 2 on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Corey, last thing for you here. What did you think of the Masters this weekend? And I know it didn't end well for Tiger, but just to get him back on the course and for him to be playing competitive golf and making a cut, you know, in such a short amount of time where basically his entire lower half was broken. How impressive was that on the span of things he's done in his career?
Well, considering I never thought I'd see him play a competitive round again, I mean, after that wreck, that was it. I was like, with all the other injuries he's had, there's no way in the world I will ever see him play a competitive round again. I was just hoping one day to see him play the par three with his son at Augusta. To see him get out there and play and then make the cut was incredible. It's right up there with his performance in 2019. It was spectacular. You know, Scottie Scheffler turned in a dominant performance. Rory was incredible to see yesterday, the run he put on. And, you know, it's one of those reminders that one of the awesome things about sports is you don't have to win to have an incredible performance. You don't have to win to create an amazing memory or an amazing legacy. And that's kind of, to me, what this weekend, you know, was all about. You know, when we got to see something we never thought we would see again.
Yeah, very well said. Corey Curtis from News 2, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, joins us every Monday morning at 8 o'clock. Corey, great stuff as always. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning.
All right, Team Dynamite goes for 3-0 Saturday morning at 10 at Crockett Park. If everybody wants to check it out. I just will say that the team we're playing won their first game 15-0, and I'm a little leery.
Ooh, boy.
Okay, you better dig in on that film, buddy.
That's right.
I think I might go recruiting.
Corey, good luck with that. We appreciate you.
Going to go recruit the U-12 leagues.
Yes.
NIL money.
That's right. Get you a collective going.
NIL money for 9-year-olds. I just had to bring cotton candy and pixie.
That's right. Corey, appreciate you.
Bye.
Hey. Who knew Corey Curtis, such a good soccer coach?
I don't know. We didn't even ask him, like, what, you know, what's he running? What kind of a system? Yeah, I have a lot more questions. I guess we'll save them for next week.
Next week, Monday. All right. 8 o'clock. We'll take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. 102.5 The Game has your chance to win a pair of tickets to the Arca Menard NASCAR Xfinity Series doubleheader on Saturday, April 23rd, and a pair of tickets to the Geico 500 on Sunday, April the 24th. Just submit a picture of you wearing your NASCAR swag using the hashtag Dega to our social media accounts, at 102.5 The Game on Twitter and at The Game Nashville on Facebook and Instagram. Once again, that's hashtag Dega to our social media accounts, at 102.5 The Game on Twitter, at The Game Nashville on Facebook and Instagram. I'm interested to see who's got the best NASCAR swag out there. I hopped in a car on Friday, the National Super Speedway.
Yeah,
awesome.
That's right. You've had an eventful sports weekend, throwing out a first pitch, and how was the track?
It was awesome, man.
Yeah?
Flying around out there. We got up to like a buck 60. It's great.
Man, Big Joe put out a video which was turned on his face, and I don't know if he was exaggerating for effect or not, but my gosh, he looked fearful.
He looked like he was terrified.
Looked like he might have been having a little accident.
I had great confidence in my driver. I was in the Richard Petty car flying around out there. Chase got in there. He was in the Dale Jr. car, and it was an emotional moment for him. It's like he was home.
That's cool. 160.
Felt good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Dustin texting in says, sorry, Corey. A great man once said, if you ain't first, you're last. I was rooting for Tiger, but we wouldn't be mentioning anyone else that placed where he did. Well, we would not, but he's Tiger, and he also came back from a car crash.
Yeah, and like it's just like we cared about the Washington Wizards who stunk, but they had Michael Jordan. I mean, that's just how it goes.
Yeah.
When Tom Brady's still trying to play at 53 and he's finally here in Nashville. a lot of the league will pay more attention to the Titans then.
Well, we didn't talk about this the other day. I'm glad you brought him up because we all know how much you love to bring him up. That Florio piece, we mentioned it briefly about him becoming maybe a player owner of the Dolphins one day. What do you think about all that? Like the idea of Tom Brady being a part of ownership with the Dolphins and maybe playing. And that could happen next year, as Florio points out, when he is a free agent from Tampa Bay.
Hey, player owner. If there was ever going to be a player owner, it makes sense. I mean, doesn't Tom Brady's wife still have a higher net worth than he does?
I think so.
Yeah. So, but that's – there you go. You pool that all together. You got the resources to be, I wouldn't be surprised someday if Tom Brady is maybe even like a majority owner somewhere, right?
Maybe
is that possible? So, yeah, why not?
It could happen.
I'm for it. The GOAT. He's the GOAT.
Tells me he's going to play for a few more years. The retirement was totally not real.
So you believe the retirement was all along not intended to be a retirement?
If Florio's report is true, yes. I believe it was not intended to be a retirement.
Many people have started sentences with, if Florio's report was
that's
true,
why I say it
dot,
that way.
Dot, dot, dot.
I know. That's why I said it that way. I mean, he's gotten some stuff right before.
No,
but
no, he has. No, he's gotten stuff right. No, for sure. Just here and there, it's like Nuclear Loose lets one fly and it hits the mascot in the head. I don't know what happens with Florio sometimes, but I guess I can't argue with you. If that's totally accurate, this was all a big plot.
Well, if it's totally accurate, I mean, you're talking about basically a 5-week retirement and all of a sudden Bruce Arians is gone. Like, that part of it I totally buy. Like, the Bruce Arians part of this, that he's just all of a sudden gone when he comes back. Obviously, there was some friction there. They can say what they want to say, and Brady can show up on the front row of the press conference, but it's pretty clear to me, anyway, that there was some friction there.
Well, it's clear there was friction.
Yep.
Are you saying it's clear that he came back and said, I'm coming back as long as Bruce is out of there?
I mean, Charles thinks so.
Yeah. No, I know. I trust you. I mean, I trust Charles. I trust you more than I trust Florio on both counts. So, no, I think you're right. There's certainly that aspect of it is a lot more believable. The whole thing. I mean, how does Tom Brady, let's say that's the case, how does Tom Brady let people do these retro? Can you maybe tell, hey, guys, just maybe hold off a little bit?
He loved it.
But how do you love yourself that much? I mean, I'm all for loving yourself, but how
can you imagine the day that Aaron Rodgers retires and how much retrospective will be done there? He'll unretire six times just to have it happen all over again.
It's just, man, there's narcissism and then there's TB12. Let's go podcast.
Chris in Nashville texting in says, Michael Jordan tried the player-owner thing, didn't he? Look how that worked out. He should have just played the owner role. Did he try player-owner?
No,
I don't think so.
No.
He's the owner now, in post-playing.
He was way past playing when he got into that.
Three's having fun with that, too. Charlotte.
Yeah.
They're always good.
Yeah, it's gone well. Nice pick there. Nice picks.
Clay in Cunningham texting in says, we cared about Alex Smith coming back after his huge injury because of how incredible a recovery it was, not because it was an amazing player. It's all about the story. This coming from Clay from Cunningham.
I think you're – well, yeah. But let's face it. I mean, I'm sure that there's some other guys on the tour who have had injuries and stuff that we don't even know about. I mean, it's still also the fact that it's Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
And we can all agree on that, right?
Oh, yeah. Chad from Chattanooga texting in says, I think Tom Brady has owned most of the AFC East for a while now.
Ooh. Yes.
Ouch. That's
yes, Chad.
The texter the other day that said – the Belichick text to Brian Flores now makes sense is my favorite theory out of all of this. Is the Belichick got wind that Brady was about to go join the Dolphins and be an owner, and he said, you know what? I'm just going to float this text message out here to Brian Flores instead of Brian Daboll, and we'll get this whole thing rolling. My favorite conspiracy theory we've ever had in the history of this text line.
Is it possible that the Giants also were part of this so they could hire a Brian so that Belichick could fake like he's talking to another Brian?
It could be.
I mean, how deep does this conspiracy go?
That's my favorite one we've ever heard.
Yeah.
I love it.
I love it.
I guess makes sense. I don't know.
Wrong, Brian. Man. Oh.
Sent that one to Flores instead of Daboll. Dang it.
You know, I don't text too often. I got like a keyboard that I attached to my phone. I'm sorry, Brian.
Yeah.
Believe me, I want all these conspiracies to be true.
Me too.
I really do.
Kyle texting in says, man, 160 miles an hour. That's most people on I-65 going down nowadays.
Except when they're going 3 miles an hour.
Yes, when there's traffic.
On average for an hour, yeah.
We'll continue to take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Darren McFarland of Darren Dog and Chase coming up to begin the 9 o'clock hour as well. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds fans, join us for Smashville Live this Wednesday night on 102.5 The Game. Smashville Live airs on Wednesdays during the Preds season from 6 to 7 p.m., featuring Preds players, former players, and other special guests, including Max Hurst. You can watch the show via 102.5 The Game's Twitch, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Be sure to join us for Smashville Live, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Smashville Live, well done this year. Max Hurst is absolute stud. No response from Max Hurst. Just a fist pump.
Max Hurst is going to be a play-by-play guy for a long time somewhere.
He is.
Is that okay? Is that okay to play-by-play guy? Is that okay? How would you prefer play-by-play announcer? What would you prefer your future title to be?
I'm fine with anything.
Okay.
I like announcer, though.
Play-by-play schmo. That's okay?
Yeah. Oh, that's
okay.
Perfect.
All right. All right.
Taking your thoughts.
I'm actually trying to compliment Max.
I know.
Freaking good, man.
He is. There's no question about it. Kyle texting in, by the way, says, I'm pretty sure that Jordan was a minority owner of the Washington Wizards when he signed to play with the team. Was he?
Is that right?
I don't know.
I thought Max was saying thank you to the texter. Thank you. Finally, these guys are saying inaccuracies. I didn't realize that if that's true.
We'll look into that. I mean, this is your favorite player. You should know this.
I know. I mean, it's funny how these stories kind of parallel each other.
Yeah, Brady and Jordan, what else could you ask for?
They're both great. They're both incredibly great. They both love each other very much. I mean, love themselves very much. Maybe
each
other.
Maybe each other, too.
Maybe each other, but also themselves, no question.
Oh, man. Yeah, he was.
See, well, I apologize.
The Washington Wizards vice president of basketball operations as well as minority owner in January of 2000.
Yeah, like, I knew that he was in the front office and made some like Kwame Brown. Nice job there, MJ. But I didn't realize he had minority ownership. That's okay. Thank you. Thank you for setting us straight.
Yeah.
It has to be done a lot. And there again, because we are the Wokal Media.
That's you.
That's me. That's right. I can't lump you in with my wokeness.
Joe, we talked about this earlier in the show. Big weekend for Tennessee football. And we've always wondered, like, if you get the five-star quarterback, because it's been so long since they've gotten, like, the five-star guy, what could that do, number one, for the program, just being on the field himself, but also, like, could that help you recruiting in terms of landing big-time players at wide receiver, just the class in general? And it looks like Tennessee's giving that part of it a shot. Nico Iamaleva, I hope I'm saying that right. I think I am.
I think that's right.
I think that's it.
Iamaleva.
In town over the weekend in Knoxville, big recruiting weekend for Tennessee, and he was out there. It looked like he had, like, the Tennessee pajama pants out on out there, throwing the football around a little bit, doing some drills. Obviously, he's a guy that is the most highly touted, I think, recruit Tennessee football's had in a long time. Some people saying the most highly touted recruit they've had since some guy named Peyton Manning walked through the door up there in Tennessee. And it looks like he is doing his darndest to recruit for the 2023 class and was out there this weekend doing that as well. There were all sorts of videos coming out of him throwing the football. His little brother, I think, is the class of 2025 as well, and he's apparently a very good prospect. Now we're getting down in the weeds of the 2025 prospect pool. That's good stuff. But how big of a deal do you think this could be now that they've landed the five-star commit? Can they get other five stars to come along with them to Tennessee if you're Josh Heupel and company?
Yeah, it's funny. So, you know, went to the Preds game Saturday, and then I saw the Nico stuff. I was like, I should have gone to Knoxville just to see that whole scene. But thankfully, Andy Staples was there. And so a lot of interesting stuff from this whole weekend, including, yes, those receivers. I want to make sure I have their names. You got Kyle Casper. You've got Carnell Tate. You're talking about Georgia, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Alabama.
Yep.
You know, the Tate kid, IMG, and IMG is obviously just a machine, just churns out massive, you know, lists of prospects every year in Bradenton, Florida. Carnell Tate has Bama, Georgia, Ohio State offers. That's a pretty good – that would seem to suggest a pretty good player. So – he's working that. I think there's the fact that he's this visible. He comes out to Knoxville for this weekend. That he's outspoken about wanting to do it. I think that's a huge deal. And we'll see, you know, we'll see where it leads to. I mean, the thing is about this is not that it wasn't the case before, but now it's more the case that also among the factors of choosing a college would also be exactly what's in it for you up front in terms of NIL money. I mean, that's, and you know, technically it's not supposed to be a recruiting inducement, but come on, we all knew it was going to be. So now, by the way, Andy Staples in his piece, you know, he actually asked his dad, Big Nick, who apparently his dad, so Nico is 6'6", but apparently his dad's like way taller and huge too. But Andy, so good on you, Andy, for having the courage to ask him if he's the guy who got the $8 million deal. He gave him a quick no comment.
Yeah.
But obviously that's the speculation here, and it will probably be so, unless, you know, anyone wants to confirm anything. But if not, then it's just going to be a source of speculation while he's in Knoxville. But he's also making money for, I mean, he's already making money for Tennessee. He's wearing the Mike Honcho shirt.
Yeah.
Like, I'd love to – we got to find out, like, what are the sales of the Mike Honcho shirt since Tony Vitello just threw that out there last Friday.
By the way, Jordan Beck just keeps cranking out home runs,
too. Yeah. And he won't even – like, no one will call him his name anymore. He's just going by Mike. But, of course – I mean, how – like, if you're Tennessee, like, especially if you're, like, Tennessee, if you're in, like, the marketing or social media department, how much of a dream is it to have Nico put on the Mike Honcho shirt? It's like, oh, my – this is Nirvana, you know, of everything coming together. But –
well,
all reports are he looked amazing throwing the ball, which is also still important.
Yeah.
That you got to actually be a good player with all this hype that comes with it. But real fast, before you make your point, his high school, okay, Long Beach Poly High, other alums of his high school, Tony Gwynn, Chase Utley, Milton Bradley, Billie Jean King, Snoop Dogg, Nate Dogg, Warren G.
Jeez.
Deshaun Jackson, William McGinnis, Carl Weathers also.
Good gracious.
My gosh. He's like not even in the top 20 of most famous dudes, and he's like he's a huge name in college
football.
Could
be an NFL quarterback one day, yeah. I mean, it's pretty incredible. I mean, look, the scope of recruiting has changed, but I will say the can Josh Heupel recruit questions that I had, I'm starting to loosen up on those a little bit. I mean, you get the quarterback's the big thing, right? We've talked about that for so long. Like, when's the next time Tennessee can find that stud quarterback that just changes your program? And look, I mean, it looks like he could be the guy. I don't know. I've never watched him throw a pass, so I couldn't tell you. In an actual college setting, we'll see what happens once he gets there and what he looks like on the field. But you get a guy like this, and if he can be effective for you on the recruiting trail, which it looks like he is fully embracing at this point, he's doing his best to try to get guys to come with him to Tennessee. I mean, that's the type of potential program-changing guy that we've been talking about. And, you know, Hendon Hooker's great. He's, I think, going to be a really good player this year for Tennessee. But the five-star recruit coming in and what that could do just for your recruiting class alone could be pretty big for Josh Heupel as they move forward here.
Yeah, and the thing with Heupel as a recruiter, and, hey, it was very lamented here.
It was.
It was a small sample size, but more than that, you still don't know what someone's going to be recruiting at this level until they actually have, you know, they actually have the Tennessee shirt to wear. Now, the hard part is, look who you're recruiting against and how can you possibly get there? And that's still a question. I mean, this is great. This is a huge start, and you hope it leads to a big class. Well, okay, can you stack the next one and the next one? Yeah, because that's where you have to get. But also, name, image, likeness. I mean, and I do think that Tennessee, with the Spire Group, what are they exactly called? I want to make sure Spire Sports.
Yeah. Hashtag collective.
Yes. I think they're ahead of the curve with that. Also think everybody's going to – all this stuff. When you're talking about the money involved in this and the talent acquisition that is tied to it, everybody's going to catch up and do a lot of the same things. But Tennessee, I think, does have a little bit of an edge there. So – you know, then you still have to keep – again, there's going to be money. I think you and I disagree on this a little bit, but, like, there are going to be times where it's just as simple as, like, what's the best offer? But, like, there are still other considerations. I mean, it's still, like, the next however many years of your life, who's coaching you? And you're still going to make more money if you're this level of prospect. You should intend to. You should be thinking this way. More money in the NFL, right? So you're still thinking about what develops me and gets me ready for that.
I don't know. You start throwing around $8 million, I think it's going to change a little bit.
Right. Well, that's fine. But, I mean, okay, so then four or five places do. Okay, yeah. So then you're back to, which is really like how it's been when it's like, oh, this McDonald's bag is stuffed. Oh, this one's a little bit. Oh, this Arby's bag is a little bit more stuffed.
I really wish that McDonald's report was true.
I know. But it doesn't matter.
It doesn't
matter. We can keep making jokes about it. Here's a quote from Staple Story. You ready?
I'm ready.
Quote, as great as some of the throws Nico made Saturday morning were, none were as beautiful as the one sailing out of the right hand of Joe Milton.
Oh, boy.
He will look like the best quarterback you've ever seen in your life, said a coach who recruited but didn't sign Milton.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you. Here's more from Staples.
I'm kind of shocked he's still there, to be honest with you.
Here's more from Staples. Watching Milton throw a football up close is breathtaking. In terms of pure arm talent, there may be only a handful of NFL quarterbacks who can match Milton, end quote.
Look, I don't deny that.
No, I know. No, we all know the issues, but, I mean, it's true. So for people like last year when Hendon Hooker was lighting it up, and I heard a lot of Vols fans, like, how the heck could you ever give this job to anybody at Hendon Hooker? This is why. And then you add the adrenaline of being on the field in a game to it that you can't rein in, and you got 20-yard overthrows all day. But he's incredible.
I bet he'd be great in a pass-punt-kick competition, man.
Oh, he'd
destroy it.
Oh. He would – if they did a network battle of the network stars like they used to, you know, in the early 80s, and they put, like, a pass-punt-kick, he would be the all-time adult record holder.
Hey, maybe he gets in a few games this year. I don't know. I'm kind of surprised he's still at Tennessee. But I guess the quarterback battle in 2023 could be Joe Milton and Nico Yamaleva.
I think it may be. Now, that's the interesting thing. I think Milton was like, you know what? I can even – I mean, he's got the years to be there in 23. But does Nico's arrival
Change that.
In all seriousness, does it maybe make him look around a little bit?
Maybe. I mean, I guess it
according to Staples, Milton's better. So I don't know.
I mean, I guess it takes Tennessee out of the Arch Manning sweepstakes, even though they were never really in it to begin with. But if you get this one, I doubt Arch Manning's coming at this point.
Well, Arch Manning should be embracing competition.
That's right.
There's a lot. Where's he going now? Virginia? Is he going?
Apparently,
to
they're
Glenn's
making a big push for him. Shout out to Arch.
That'd be something.
That would be. Join ESPN 102.5 The Game for the Music City Celebrity Golf Tournament, benefiting Folds of Honor, coming up on May 16th at Hermitage Golf Course. You can put your team together and come play with athletes, musicians, and other local celebrities. Sign up at thegamenashville.com/golf. By the way, Titan safety Kevin Byard going to be a part of that as well. So make sure you put your team together. Sign up at thegamenashville.com/golf. We'll get into a busy weekend for the Nashville Predators that sets up a massive week at home, all at home. This week on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tickets for the Music City Grand Prix, which is coming up August 3rd through the 7th, go on sale this Wednesday at 10 o'clock in the morning. 102.5 The Game has your chance to win 3-day passes to the Music City Grand Prix now. Just text the word RACE to the game text line at 615-737-1025. That's RACE to 615-737-1025 to be qualified to win. More details on the Music City Grand Prix can be found at MusicCityGP.com. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit LittleGuysFranchise.com. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We'll be joined by Darren McFarland coming up to begin the 9 o'clock hour. Get his thoughts on the Preds. And interesting weekend for the Preds, Joe. 1 out of 4 points collected against Florida and Pittsburgh, obviously. That's a tough back-to-back, the top team in the East in Florida, and a very good Pittsburgh team as well on the road on the second half of a back-to-back. So you get 1 out of 4 points. You're in the first wild card spot after the weekend. Dallas had an atrocious loss to New Jersey on Saturday. They followed up with a win last night against Chicago. So Dallas now 1 point back of the Predators. Preds at 87 points, Dallas at 86. The games played is even between the Preds and the Stars. Vegas, 3 points back of the Predators. Now just one game in hand on Vegas as you move forward here this week. What do you think of the games this weekend for the Predators, and what do you make of this spot they're in now with 10 games left in the regular season?
I mean, I'd rather be in their spot than be in Dallas's spot or Vegas's spot, but it's not. There's not a huge difference anymore. I mean, you know, same number, get 10 games to play. Preds in Dallas right now for obviously the top wild card and the second wild card. 1 point separates them. And then Vegas, like you said, they've got 9 games left. They got a 3-point deficit to make. If you're Vegas, you're like, hey, this is still absolutely in play. This is still doable. And that, of course, is a nightmare scenario for the Preds, that they fall behind both of those teams and don't make the playoffs. They have a 7 of the last 10 at home. And they've got some very good teams in there and some teams they should beat in there, and I don't even know which you'd rather play right now if you're the Preds based on how they play. I thought they played okay this weekend. Saturday, John Hines wasn't happy, and I get it. I thought they responded pretty well yesterday. I thought they were, you know, they had a chance to win that game. They're up 2-1 in the third. Crosby got them. Still, I think, important to get that point. I think they were pretty good this weekend, but you got to be better than that.
Well, you do, and I think John Hines' point on Saturday was you can't just come out and just play against a team like Florida. Like, the Predators are not good enough to just – he didn't say they were going through the motions, but he did basically say the pace was not where it needed to be, the work ethic, the competitiveness on the puck, I think is what he used, and then just puck execution. That's the thing that continues to stick out to me is, like, there were plays to be made, I thought, in that game on Saturday where they just didn't make them. Like, Tolvanen, he had a couple of passes to him right in the slot where he just didn't get it. He didn't get his stick on it. And there were hot ones from Duchesne coming in there, but, like, you got to get your stick on the puck, man, and just make some plays there. Defensively, there were a couple of lapses that they had. Obviously, like, Roman Josi, you give Roman Josi that chance 100 times on the boards there with the net wide open. He probably scores on 98 of them.
That's about right.
And that was one of the two that he didn't score on. Now, you know, I get what he's trying to do there. He's trying to get it off quickly before Spencer Knight can cut off the angle there. And Knight was diving, so he's trying to elevate it over him too, and he just missed it and went off to the left. But that's a chance that 98 times out of 100 he probably scores on.
Well, so in real time, and we were both on press row Saturday, in real time I was like, oh my gosh, they're going to lose, and that's going to be why, and that's the easiest goal you'll ever not score.
Yeah.
On the replay, Knight actually got his stick out quite well to take a lot of it away, and he was left, and then he didn't elevate. If he just would have elevated a little bit, it's a gimme. So, yeah, 98 is probably about right. Maybe there's one other time in 100 where he botches it, but that's a killer miss. There are a lot of other chances they had. See, it's always interesting when, like, I think Hines used the term competitive level, you know, Saturday. And that's where, I mean, my limitations are clear because I'm seeing certain plays, like Janot just annihilate people out there and everything. And I'm like, I feel like the physicality, the competitiveness is there, but there's a higher level, obviously, that they have played at, that they can play at, that they do sometimes, and that he didn't see from his team Saturday, which is disappointing. Florida was on the second day of a back-to-back.
Chris on the text line says, man, Robbie, you have those Hines cliches down. Was that a replay of Saturday's post-game? Good execution there. I've been around a few.
Take that hat off and just do a little John Hines impersonation.
Right? I could do it.
Maybe John Hines should grow a beard like you, though. Maybe he should copy you.
Maybe so. I did think they responded pretty well yesterday. I mean, you get a point on the road in Pittsburgh. I mean, going into the weekend, if you had told me they got a point in Pittsburgh, I would have probably said, okay, yeah, I'll take that if I'm the Predators. You wanted to at least split, especially like when Dallas, the Dallas-Jersey game was final on Saturday before you even dropped the puck at 5 o'clock. And I was like, man, this is a big opportunity for the Predators that Dallas just choked one away to the Devils. Like, you could win Florida. You'd be in pretty good spot there. And then you factor in maybe a bonus point in Pittsburgh, you'd really be sitting pretty right now. But it sets up a big week. I mean, you got San Jose coming in on Tuesday. They're playing out the string. Chicago Saturday is playing out the string. As we know, those type of games have been dangerous for the Predators as of late. Like, to me, you've got your next five games at home, and I know you've got St. Louis and Calgary coming up next week, Sunday and Tuesday. I said it earlier. I agree. I'm sticking with it. Like, to me, I think if you're the Predators, you need to win all three of these home games this week. San Jose, Edmonton's been playing really well as of late, and then Chicago. Certainly, you need to beat San Jose and Chicago. I think you need to beat Edmonton, too. Like, this is a chance where, yes, the schedule is difficult. Yes, you're playing a lot of really good teams. But having the next five at home should help you. Like, this should be a stretch here where you could go on a run here at home and collect some points.
So, of the 20 possible points, what's a safe number? 14 would put them at a 101, which is very hard to miss the playoffs.
You're in at 101. Honestly, I think the sweet spot may end up being around 97, 98. I think that could get you in. I mean, some of it depends. Like, Dallas and Vegas play each other one time coming down the stretch. So, what do the standings look like then? Is Dallas 4 points up and Vegas wins? Is Dallas 4 points up and they win? Like, that's a big game coming down the stretch. You don't play either one of them. So, the head-to-head part of it's taken care of at this point. So, a little bit of it's a guess. If I want to feel comfortable if I'm the Predators, I'd probably try to get to 100.
Yeah,
like, I think it's going to be pretty close.
Get the 13 of 20.
Yeah.
So it's possible. Yeah. I mean, but I think you're right. They can get 11 of 20 points, get to 98, which is typically a playoff team, and be in. Now, that might be the second wild card, and you might be playing Colorado to start if you only go there.
Yeah.
If you get to 13-14, you're probably playing Calgary.
Probably. And everybody keeps talking about Calgary like they're some pushover. Like, Calgary's really good.
They're not cheeks.
I would much rather play St. Louis or Minnesota than Calgary.
Johnny
Gaudreau's
only plus 53. Come on,
yeah,
Robbie.
Like, I know, I get it. Like, you want to avoid Colorado, so I understand that part of it. I really do. But I think somebody's acting like Calgary's like this much weaker option than Colorado is, and I don't buy that.
Yeah. It's just that they're a much less celebrated, star-laden team than Colorado is.
Yes.
That's what it is, right?
I mean, still, to me, the dream matchup, I've said this for the last 2 months. At this point, I don't think it's going to happen. But if you could somehow creep up into third and pass St. Louis, who I think just passed Minnesota, if you could get Minnesota in the first round, I think you'd be feeling okay.
Yeah, I mean you're seven behind both those teams now. That's what you had to have a better weekend to keep within that shouting distance. You're 7 points behind both of them. Yeah, so they're tied at 94. Minnesota actually has a game in hand.
Yep.
So that's going to be the matchup.
Yep.
You blew that. If that's what you were pining for, I don't see how that happens.
Let's go to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nate texting in says, I still don't understand how Borowiecki got a slashing minor. Malkin slashed Boro's stick out of his hands and then cross-checked him in the face. There was no indication of a Borowiecki penalty before the little altercation. It makes zero sense. I guess the officials went to the iPad to look for something to give to him. I don't think they went to the iPad, but it is interesting. I'm still looking for the slash.
The slash was very – I assumed it was just that little – yeah, the little tap right before Malkin did something that should have been
a major penalty.
A major.
Yeah. You can't just cross-check people in the face. So.
I mean, usually reactions also have something to do, even though they probably shouldn't, with, like, the outcome. I mean, blood was squirting out of his face instantly.
Yes.
Is that any kind of impact? Yeah. No? Okay.
Well, and he didn't come back in the game. I mean, I get it. The way he plays, he's lent himself to injury a little bit more with just how physical he is, but that's a situation where, I mean, it's a needless cheap shot that takes one of your defensemen out of the game.
So is it more that it's the refs favor the Pens, or is it Borowiecki doesn't get the benefit of the doubt, or some combination?
Well, I mean, this is one of those situations where I don't really know, like, what do you need to see? The official's standing right there, and it's a cross-check two-hand to the face. Like, it's as black and white as it gets, I think. But apparently not. So, one mute.
Dang it.
Coming up next, we'll get Darren McFarland's thoughts on that, thoughts on the Preds weekend as a whole and where they sit heading into the final couple weeks of the regular season. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.